Special guest this morning, Busy Tuesday moves on.
City Council member Jim Sims is
Jim,
with us.
Jim, good. Welcome back to the program, my friend. How are you?
I am fantastic, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
We are busy, and that's why we are having you join us, because we want to get caught up. We haven't talked to you in a few weeks, and there have been plenty of stories moving on in city government that we want to connect all the dots and make sure we don't have any loose ends hanging out there. And the city council obviously has been very busy getting things ready to go. You're going to be very busy, as Keith reminds me, as you'll break here for the summer session in July and get ready for budget talks. But we've got plenty to do before that. Where are we? We saw an article the other day in the front page of the HT about the Lenco Bearcat coming to town and the provisions. And tell me what's happening with that. I get the idea that we want to put things in place that will be followed regardless of who the administration is. Tell me what the city council's role in all of that is today.
Well, I think what you said is absolutely correct. In the city council's role, and I don't want to say simply, but what we want to do is codify legislation that will direct its use on into the future. One of the things we do know, and I have great respect for Chief Decaw, and we work with the mayor, but let's just face it, we have basically a 20-year life expectancy of the Bearcat, and who's to say who our next police chief will be or our next mayor will be. So we just think it's best that if we could add legislation that will codify its use, or and on the flip side of that, how it will not be used.
And when you talk about codifying legislation, tell me how that process works. When you sit together with your council folks and put together legislation, it's approved, it goes to the mayor's desk, he stamps it and says, this is great. How does that, or can that be changed? Talk about that process. So you want to codify it for a reason.
Yeah, and what we'll do is we'll start with legislation, and then we'll have a resolution, and we'll discuss it. Of course, then we'll vote on it, and it will become law or a city ordinance that will dictate its use. So there is a lot that goes into that. There is a matrix that the police chief uses, a scoring system that can determine when or when not the vehicle will be deployed. We've had a lot of discussion on making sure it's not going to be armed, not with high caliber weapons, not water cannons. There is a battering ram attachment, but we strongly felt that should not be attached to the vehicle itself. There could be a need for it, so it'll be transported in a separate vehicle if, again, it is determined that that is needed. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of discussions that many people don't know about. For an example, the vehicle that we will be getting, which is not the initial Lenco Bearcat, the one we're getting looks more like an ambulance in nature, as opposed to a military assault vehicle that you would see in Ferguson or Syria or something. But what's important is the armored capabilities of it. But for an example, gun ports on this vehicle, I do believe there were 12 of them. We didn't like that look and thought that it would further escalate the discussion on militarizing the police force. But the police department itself felt strongly that several of them would be needed to deploy non-lethal force if necessary, beanbags, rubber bullets, that sort of thing. So we go from 12 gun ports in the design down to 4. So just things like that what we're trying to do the very best we can to, A, protect our CERT officers and any hostages that may need to be rescued, as well as to not enrage our citizenship by giving the perception that we are militarizing our police force.
Jim, this may sound like a strange question, but when you were talking, it inspired this thought. You're going to have a point system to determine the use, and certain things have to happen in order to build up the points that will determine how it can be used for what situation. Who's the scorekeeper? Who decides how many points have been earned?
Well, you have BPD leadership when calls or situations first arise. But it's my understanding that the final decision on whether to deploy or not will be that of the chief, in okay. this case, Chief Dekoff.
Now, the other question is, Mike was intimating this when he asked you, when you make these rules, can they not be changed by a subsequent city council?
Every rule and ordinance that we have, obviously, Keith, I think, you know, can be changed.
Right.
But I think this is what's best for, at this particular time, with this particular situation, this vehicle, we think this is the best route to go. Do I anticipate that it will be changed in the future? No, I do not. And I know we don't want to say in Bloomington and Bloomington's paradise and a bunch of other things. Bloomington has some issues and problems like any other city. But I also think that the Bloomington population are a little bit more progressive. And if you have good public discussion and debate and work out details, I think for the most part, things can and will work out. One of the things I'm learning on being on the city council is that words matter. So you don't want to be willy-nilly. You want to give it great thought because the words that you use definitely will be held as accountable on into the future.
Exactly.
Jim Sims, city councilman, checking in with us this morning. In the past, when you had the vehicle that this is replacing, there wasn't a usage codification. Is that something that you saw as an is this preventative medicine, for lack of a better word, or is this something because of the new vehicle you believe needs to be part of the deal?
We think it needs to be part of the deal. I'm not so sure preventative is the right word. We've had a version of an armored vehicle in the past. Without much fanfare, and it was deployed, you know, several times. But I think in particular at the beginning, the Lenco Bearcat and the company that manufactures it and the military vehicles that they actually produce, I thought brought some trepidation and some concern to our citizens, and rightfully so. So I think that's where we got to where we are.
Will the codification encourage public awareness in the sense that it will be displayed at places where people can, quote-unquote, get to know it, or is this going to be something that is just out of sight, out of mind, until it needs to be in sight and in mind?
I know there's space in between those two options you just mentioned. But
yes, there is. You're exactly right.
You know, you take me from end to end, but I do say somewhere in between there, it is more likely to be out of sight, out of mind.
Okay.
This is not something we want to have a touch at you know, the night out program.
Right.
Up on Cressmont. And,
the touch a truck,
you know,
kind of thing.
And post in Atlanta. No, we don't particularly want that.
Right.
In fact, it is our goal that you will never ever see this thing unless it is needed to deploy for the safety of our officers or the rescuing of hostages. Now, from the public standpoint, whenever it is used or deployed, and I dare say if it's even been discussed about deploying, there will be public explanation as to why, or, you know, from the police chief,
right,
telling us what happened, what were some of the elements or criteria, what was the need for that consideration even in the first place.
Jim,
so
one
I think that's going to be a big plus to inform the public.
One of the things in Bloomington, you hear the word transparency a lot on what you're talking about with the Lenco. Do you feel the public's had its voice in the design of this codification?
Yes, I do. And unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, much of that discussion came after
right.
It was announced the purchase of the vehicle, as opposed to, I think many of us prefer to have that discussion beforehand. And of course, if it's already coming, then there's the perception that the deal had already been made and there's nothing you can do to stop it. And, which isn't quite true. But there is a need for us to have, or many of us support the need to protect our CERT officers. And I will add that one of the things, the main concern is the militarization of our police force. And that is what we're trying to avoid. We're more of a 21st century community policing concept.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're trying to deploy. I think having downtown resource officers, more community policing concepts, some additional and deeper training from implicit bias and de-escalation. Now, obviously, it'll take some time for these to take deeper effect, but I think we're on the right track. Along with that, and many people don't think about this, that if you get the vehicle and you militarize your police department, well, that comes with batons and shields and, you know, these sorts of things where you line up and try to do crowd control and or, mm-hmm. you know, oppress, you know, marginalized groups or whatever. Those are the things we're really trying to avoid. This vehicle is simply to protect our officers and rescue needed hostages in unsafe situations.
Jim, is there a delivery date on this vehicle?
My understanding is sometime in July, actually.
Okay.
Now,
another thing that was all over the front page of the paper, the city council was really concerned about the opioid crisis, and there were some treatment centers and a lot of them coming, and one of the feelings apparently was, well, if you have a lot of treatment centers, then it'll invite even more people that have drug problems into the city. The city was going to move to put some rules in. All of a sudden, the city says, now, hold on. Now, is that the city does not care anymore, or the city's just going on a different timeline to address this situation?
Well, I think it's safe to say that at least the city council, and I dare say city administration, care a lot more than many people would think or give us credit for. Yes, it was a concern of bringing in additional people to use these facilities and how they would fit within our city structure and what were some of the other possible issues that could come with that. And keep in mind also that the state will be opening or in the process June 26th or something like that. We'll have a state methadone clinic, which has been estimated to bring in approximately 500 people a day. Now, that's separate from the drug treatment facilities in our mind. The one thing, and again, we've had some discussions, but nothing official. My concern was that of for-profit and what can be perceived as predatory treatment centers. So we just didn't think in our community that that was the best way to treat folks in need. Now, this moratorium, and initially, you know, you might think it's a good idea, and I think at some point there has to be a limit so we can review and make sure that it's an actual treatment center that will help people and want to be a part of our city and do what we want to do. But if you institute that moratorium, one of the things, and I have to admit, I didn't really foresee that would stop some of the actions of the treatment centers that we already have that are doing a really good job in helping people. And ultimately, that is not what we wanted to do.
So the issue was, if the moratorium started, like you said, somebody wouldn't be up to code or up to speed, and that would set the treatment back or not make it possible at all.
Well, I think it would have negative effects on some of the treatment centers and programs that are already in existence.
Okay,
That are doing good work, and we don't really want to stifle that or stop that progress while dealing with maybe, and this is just my words, maybe some undesirable issues. I had the pleasure of talking with a gentleman named Jim McClellan, who's the executive director for drug prevention, treatment, and enforcement for the state of Indiana, out of Governor Holcomb's office, and had a nice discussion with him. And one of his main concerns was what I just intimated to you. He thinks looking out for predatory or facilities that just aren't in the best interest, and particularly for profit, that are here simply for the profits, Many of them, if not all of them, are from out of state.
Right.
But his concern was exactly what I said earlier, is that how was that going to affect some of the centers that we already have that are working in light of the opioid crisis that is not reducing itself or waning, it seems, in any manner at this time.
And that's a tough decision because you don't know if it should be a capitalistic way of solving the program or a governmental way of solving the program or the problem. That's tough.
Well, that's true. And many of, you know, you are, I'll speak individually, and that's part of the council, but individually, it is just reprehensible to me that if you're a treatment center and you're doing drug testing, which you have to do to treat your patients, but then some of the prices that I've heard that will be charged to some of these clients just for a, and I don't want to say simple, but for a routine drug test, to me is just unconscionable, you know, and that's one of the issues that we have. We want people to be helped. Opioid crisis is definitely something that we have to address, us and many other communities. But at the same time, you know, we don't, you know, want to just be totally adverse to our clients and people that are in need to help. And I will add, in many cases, they are the lower socioeconomic folks that can least afford many of these for-profit tactics.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And moving forward with this, as we talk about, there's really, where do you see your example? Where do we follow the lead from? This is a new issue. This is a new crisis. Where do you get your guidance moving forward on this?
Well, I think, and I can't speak for the mayor's office, but one of the things is I think you have to reach out and involve more people. This can get complicated. And on down the line, it's a possibility there could be lawsuits. And not that we're afraid of any of that if we think we're on solid ground and correct. But if you can avoid all that by legislation and doing what's right and fair for all, then I think that's the best route to go. And we do that in many, many cases. For an example, the SOBs, as we called them that in the past, the sex-oriented businesses, there is a federal law case, I'm sorry, Supreme Court law, that says they have to have a certain percentage of opportunity, of land or something to do business.
Right.
So then it's down to your local government to decide where that fits based on your zoning, based on neighbors' concerns, discussions, certain corridors, that sort of thing. So many people, you'll start with the headlines, but then that's when the real work gets involved. We start discussing where, if you do point A, where does it go?
Right,
point B,
zoning and things like that.
Exactly right.
Yeah, and then, exactly. Then not in my backyard because nobody wants one.
That never happens. That never happens.
right next door or whatever it's going to be. Your information has been outstanding this morning. I'm not surprised because that's why we'd like to get caught up with you. Quickly, your schedule moving forward, I saw you're going to have meetings on, I believe, the 20th and 27th. Is that correct or somewhere in there?
Yes.
And then it's then July kind of gets quiet as you get ready for budget time and all of that. Can we touch base with you before you go away for your little summer hiatus there to get caught up on everything?
You sure can, and I will add that City Council will take a break. But every city council member sits on 3, 4, or 5 subcommittees.
Gotcha. so you know, you get a break from the council meetings, but not a break from everything else.
Exactly right.
Well, that's good.
And of course, that's why we're here. So, you know, that's what we do.
Yeah, you're not disappearing for the 6 weeks or whatever it is, just the council meetings.
Is that even possible?
No. You just got more work to do at your other job.
Isn't that the truth?
Well, Jim, we appreciate your insight. We appreciate your candor, and thanks for keeping us in the loop. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Gentlemen, it's my pleasure. Look forward to next time.
All right, Jim Sims, city councilman, checking in here on a Tuesday morning, and really
That's
good
deep,
stuff on that. It is.
Deep stuff.
Well, it's tough. There's no
But you know what I like is he easy. Explains how you see something, not just A and B. It's like how you view A and B.
And the council has a job to do. And balancing all this has to be difficult. It shouldn't be easy, but it's great that Jim gives us the time to get a little insight of how they think, how he thinks on all of this moving forward.